Hello and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU provides each of our listeners with current information on a wide variety of topics related to health, athletic performance, fitness, and nutrition. On track one, Corey will provide his commentary adapted from the Certified Sports Nutrition Advisor Education Program, current research data, and his clinical experience. On track two, he will be joined by Tracy Hawley on He Said, She Said, for her female focus on topics related to whole food, health, relationships, and raising healthy children. Track three features an interview with our special guest, who will share their expertise and experience in the healthcare, fitness, and sports nutrition field. Here is Corey Hawley and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, Volume 7, Number 2. This is the third in a four-part series titled The Big Four. The Big Four include whey protein isolate, creatine monohydrate, HMB, and L-glutamine. I've covered HMB and L-glutamine in previous editions, so let's move on to creatine, one of my favorite supplements and certainly the one that has helped put the science of sports nutrition on the map. There's a lot to cover on this particular supplement, so this will be a two-part series. First thing, creatine monohydrate is not harmful, even for children, as it is biosynthesized in every man, woman, and child, and has been consumed in food for millennia without evidence of damage. A significant increase in strength and muscle cell volume after the first 7 to 10 days is not uncommon. Several forms exist which include different methods of application, but the monohydrate, the creatine monohydrate form in a dry, stable form is well documented and confirmed by the most legitimate research. It's the form Colgan and I both advocate over every other, and it's also the form recommended by more experts who specialize in creatine metabolism, including Kreider, Balsam, Ernest, Greenhalgh, Holtman, Amolda, Burke, Pasquale, Kolker, and Turnipuskowski. Creatine is found naturally in red meat, herring, and in the skeletal muscle of vertebrates, but it would take several pounds of animal flesh to get the same effective dose found in 1 teaspoon of the supplement. A teaspoon contains about 5 grams. By increasing the amount of creatine phosphate, or CP, in human skeletal muscle tissue, which in turn increases ATP availability during intense exercise, creatine monohydrate provides athletes with a tremendous edge over a placebo, thus increasing sprint speed, vertical jump height, strength, muscle endurance, and lean muscle mass. Creatine monohydrate increases muscle cell content of free creatine and creatine phosphate, especially in vegetarians and exercised muscles. For the weight trainer and athlete, it delays fatigue and improves recovery, increases lean body mass and strength, and boosts muscle torque during repeated bouts of maximal voluntary exercise. So to keep pace with previous SNUs, let's answer the 5 most important questions. What is it? What does it do? How much do you take? When do you take it? And finally, are there any side effects? Okay, so what is creatine? Creatine is known chemically as methylguanidine acetic acid. It is a nitrogenous amine, a non-protein nitrogen, a phosphagen made naturally in the body. It is synthesized in the liver, pancreas, and kidneys from the amino acids glycine, arginine, and methionine. Approximately 95% of the body's creatine is stored in skeletal muscle, of which 60 to 70% binds to phosphate, forming phosphocreatine, or PCR. The remaining 30 to 40% exists as free creatine. The other 5% is located in the heart, brain, and testes. Normal concentrations of creatine without supplementation average about 120 to 125 millimoles per kilogram in dry muscle. With supplementation, it is possible to increase concentration up to 145 to 165 millimoles per kilogram. So there's a substantial increase in the amount of phosphocreatine in muscle cells after taking creatine. And this is the key in knowing, because performance is energy-based, and when you've got more potential energy in the muscle cell and you can draw from that energy, it just makes sense that anybody who's looking for more energy should look at creatine as a supplement. Creatine is transported by the blood and delivered with the support of insulin to skeletal muscle cells, where it is converted into creatine phosphate, which is also called phosphocreatine. It enters muscle cells through mechanisms associated with a sodium-dependent entry process and diffusion, and possibly a transporter protein, which may be genetically programmed. Average sedentary individuals have about 120 grams of creatine stored in their bodies, 4 grams per kilogram of muscle tissue, and biosynthesize about 1 to 2 grams daily. Excretion of creatinine, or creatinine, depending upon how you want to say it, as a result of normal degradation of the body's creatine pool per day averages about 2 grams. So we metabolize and process creatine. A product called creatinine is produced, and that's what's excreted, and that's what medical doctors identify in blood plasma and serum when they do some of these liver tests. And, of course, you need to tell them that you're taking creatine, because you'll register higher than average amounts of excretion because you're processing more of it. Just makes sense. And remember, the stuff is not toxic. No matter what anyone says, it is very, very safe to consume. Derived from the Greek word kreos, meaning flesh, creatine is a natural constituent of animal flesh. Good dietary sources include herring, salmon, beef, lamb, cod, and tuna. And so fish is by far the best source of creatine. Wild animals swimming in lakes and rivers, streams, and oceans. By the way, fish is probably also the best animal protein to eat outside of wild game like moose and bison. Average dietary intake is about 1 gram of creatine a day. Cooking reduces the value of creatine and can actually convert it into toxic byproducts. So heat denatures protein and also ruins creatine. Another reason why things like sashimi and undercooked animal proteins are definitely the way to go. Fast twitch muscle fibers in the body contain about 15% more creatine than slow twitch muscle fibers. Because of sarcopenia and in aging people, they tend to lose the fast twitch muscles first, which means their potential to draw energy from those fibers which are missing is going to be compromised. So this is why intense exercise for seniors is very important. You get them into shape, and then you get them to perform heavy sets of 3 to 6 reps so that they can stimulate the fast twitch fiber base and maintain a good source and basin of creatine in those tissues. Wild animals have up to twice or more the amount of creatine stored in their muscles than domesticated animals. Basically, that's because domesticated animals are confined and don't move, don't run, don't stampede, don't hunt, and don't continuously look for food and move. Physical activity and routine use of skeletal muscle increases the demand for creatine. It does this in people, too. Creatine monohydrate is the most reliable form, as I mentioned. As a supplement, it is available as a dry, stable, crystalline powder, which may be micronized to improve solubility. Creatine monohydrate consists primarily of 88% creatine and 12% water. It is typically available as a white, particulate, tasteless, and odorless powder. After consuming, creatine dissociates in the gut and is absorbed through the intestinal wall into the blood by active transport. So what does creatine do? Well, creatine is delivered to the cell and converted to creatine phosphate, which combined with ATP, or adenosine triphosphate, constitutes the phosphagen system, which is also called the ATP-CP system, or the direct phosphorylation system. After giving up its chemical energy through the release of one of its phosphates, ATP is reduced to ADP, adenosine diphosphate. To keep pace with energy demands, creatine phosphate donates its phosphate molecule to ADP, which recreates additional ATP. So ADP is regenerated by the donation of the phosphate that is a function of creatine phosphate, and more creatine phosphate is in the cell as a concept as a result of taking more creatine. So that's how more ATP is available for longer periods of time, especially in anaerobic training where there's a lack of oxygen but high demands on muscle and intense exercise. So it does allow for continued anaerobic energy provision. So in other words, you can hold your breath and train longer, harder if you have more creatine phosphate inside your muscle cells. Resting between sets of intense exercise allows most of the remaining free creatine and free phosphate molecules to recombine and form more phosphocreatine. This step requires oxygen, however. The rest, or about 10%, is excreted, appearing as creatinine in urine. On average, it takes about 3 to 5 minutes to resynthesize phosphocreatine after an intense period of anaerobic physical activity or exercise, such as sprinting up a hill or performing a set of squats to failure in the gym. Creatine promotes muscle growth by allowing skeletal muscles to work harder longer. It also improves tolerance to repeated workouts long term and shields muscle cells against a variety of oxygen-free radical species produced randomly through intense exercise. As creatine is taken up into muscle cells, it associates with water, increasing the volume of each cell. This effect, known as hygroamplification or cell volumizing, helps improve the synthesis of protein and glycogen and actually improves the hydration status of individual cells, improving their capacity to perform work. Creatine is osmotically active. As water volume inside the cell increases, leverage factors change, which can and often does provide a remarkable lifting advantage. From a biomechanical point of view, strength gains can be explained by examining parameters of work performance, such as body mass and structure, in relation to time and distance, position, angle of movement, the force of gravity, and by understanding the function of skeletal muscle as a powerful lever modeled by tendon attachment to bone, and by performing a muscle biopsy to determine variances in millimole concentration of creatine phosphate compared to a placebo, measuring blood plasma and urine levels of creatine and creatinine, and calculating the energy dynamics associated with contraction of muscle fibers, recruitment of fibers, motor neuron involvement, electrical potentials, etc. Creatine lowers plasma ammonia and reduces lactic acid formation. Increased levels of creatine phosphate reduce glycogen use in anaerobic exercise. Phosphocreatine helps buffer hydrogen ions that reduce muscle pH and cause fatigue in exercise. Creatine monohydrate causes changes in body composition, which correlate to increased lean mass and reduced body fat percentage. Initial increases in body weight are due primarily to an increased intracellular water concentration. But there's also data that shows that protein synthesis is enhanced with added quantities of creatine in the cell. Creatine helps older adults increase muscle mass and strength and maintain brain function. Thus, creatine is useful to offset the catabolic forces responsible for sarcopenia. Creatine helps older adults increase muscle mass and strength and maintain brain function. Thus, creatine is useful to offset the catabolic forces responsible for causing sarcopenia. Creatine may improve agility and muscle coordination. It influences oxygen kinetics by signaling the mitochondria during respiration and also acts as a signal to stimulate protein synthesis. Creatine helps bodybuilders obtain more definition and greater vascularity. It improves nitrogen retention, which reduces protein breakdown and improves recovery from strenuous exercise and sport. Creatine boosts the power potential of individual myofilaments within individual muscle fibers, which increases muscular power. Although associated mainly with high-intensity and short-duration anaerobic sport and training benefits, creatine is also beneficial for endurance athletes because of its glycogen-sparing effect to prevent weight gain due to increased retention of water. Simply take a smaller dose. Women should maybe think of taking 2 grams on a daily basis post-workout, whereas the guys need to get into the 4, 5, and 6 grams. I myself take about 6 grams a day in a post-workout shake. Creatine may provide benefit in fatigue syndrome, such as fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, and multiple chemical sensitivities. Creatine monohydrate is prescribed in complementary alternative medicine for ischemic heart disease, immune system impairment, muscular dystrophy, post-surgical healing, and age-related low energy concerns. A study by Patrick Sullivan and colleagues from the University of Kentucky found that creatine protects the brain after injury. Creatine protects the brain from inadequate blood flow and from free radical damage. Based on evidence in controlled animal studies, creatine works by protecting mitochondria in brain cells and by preserving fuel levels that normally decrease when the brain is injured. Creatine can be added to the list of agents that modify risk of cardiovascular disease associated with elevated homocysteine. Taking creatine monohydrate as a supplement helps reduce homocysteine levels by suppressing the production of creatine inside the body. Some people were concerned about becoming dependent on the supplement, and now we have further evidence to resist this concern. The body releases homocysteine when it biosynthesizes creatine in the liver, spleen, and pancreas, whereas taking creatine monohydrate as a supplement decreases the rate the body releases homocysteine, which may reduce the risk of ischemic heart disease. So this is important to know. Anybody with a cardiac condition should be promoted, and you should tell them to consider taking creatine monohydrate as a supplement and add it to their shakes and get them onto the shakes with the essential fatty acids, the nice clean carbs, and the whey protein isolate. Creatine can improve cholesterol and triglyceride profiles and reduce blood sugar concentration due to its effect and or connection with insulin or both. The next question is, how much do you take? An average loading phase, which is designed to maximize total saturation as quickly as possible, consists of taking 3 to 5 grams per serving in 3 or 4 divided doses for about a week. The total daily intake would be equivalent to about 9 to 20 grams, depending on individual lean mass. Again, 1 teaspoon of creatine monohydrate is equivalent to about 5 grams. Average maintenance dose consists of 1 2- to 5-gram serving, taken once daily, preferably after training. You can also add creatine to your workout drinking water bottle. Mix it with some electrolytes and some high glycemic carbohydrates. That is also an effective way to use creatine. Colgan's loading regime is as follows. 0.5 grams per kilogram of muscle weight. And in men, 50% of their lean mass is actual skeletal muscle. In women, only 35%. So that's divided into 4 equal doses taken at spaced intervals. And for more info on Colgan's recommendations, you can read Creatine for Muscle and Strength, and that's available to buy online at ColganInstitute.com. Colgan's maintenance regime is 25% of your loading dose. So if you load at 20 grams a day, 25% of that is 5 grams per day. We know that you don't need to load, that you can just hop right into a daily dose, and at the end of 3 weeks, 4 weeks, you're going to saturate your myocytes with creatine phosphate equal to what you would do with dose loading. It's just that the dose loading gets it loaded up faster. You can also refer to the creatine loading and maintenance chart for dosage guidelines based on lean body mass. You can find this at CoreyHawley.com. just click the articles link and then look for this chart under charts. Okay, another method of creatine use advocates the use of total body weight for the determination of loading and maintenance dose. Multiply your total weight in kilograms by 0.3 to determine your loading dose in grams, and then multiply your total weight in kilograms by 0.03 to determine your daily single maintenance dose after loading for maybe 5 days. This method isn't as accurate compared to using lean body mass, but can be useful when lean mass is undetermined. Maximum saturation of total creatine throughout the body is the same after 30 days. I mentioned that, whether you load or not. Loading fills the pool faster, but once the muscle pool is full, taking more than 3 to 5 grams as a daily maintenance dose is futile, as only small limited amounts are lost due to training and general metabolism. It's like this. Once a cup is full of water, it is full. You can't make it any fuller by adding more water, taking more creatine than what's required to maintain saturation after saturation is achieved. Simply leads to a spillage effect, and any excess creatine is excreted through the bowels and kidneys or via both. So taking 10, 20, 30, 40 grams in addition to what has been determined based on an ideal amount is just simply not recommended. It won't hurt you, but you could dehydrate your body because a lot of creatine coming in will use up a lot of water. And of course, you do need to consume a lot of water when you're taking in shakes and creatine, as you normally would anyway. Loading can accommodate strength gains more quickly and is beneficial when used in relation to special events, such as a bodybuilding competition or a track and field event. In some cases, loading can also overcome insulin-resistant non-response. Loading also appears to be more important if creatine is cycled on and off, as opposed to a continuous ongoing basis, where the rate of saturation is less significant. I recommend a maintenance dose of 2 to 5 grams taken once daily after a workout in a shake combined with glutamine, whey protein, and carbs on a continuous and ongoing basis, much like vitamin C or E. Over 1,000 clinical trials have been completed to date regarding the safety and numerous advantages of creatine. I personally will continue to use creatine as a nutrition staple every day for the rest of my life. Like many sports nutrition products, creatine is a fabulous product, but creatine provides value that goes way beyond sport performance. As long as the stress of training and the stress of living continue, and as long as my body is exposed to the catabolic and destructive forces of nature, I will continue to use creatine to protect my body from oxidation, cancer, and muscular atrophy. Creatine's effectiveness depends on insulin sensitivity and efficiency, which is enhanced by chromium, vanadium, vitamin E, DHEA, lipoic acid, magnesium, and the omega-3 fatty acids. So when you're using creatine, make sure that you're getting these other nutrients both from your diet and as supplements. As I've mentioned many times before, you cannot get everything that you require to optimize form and function and performance at the highest level from diet alone. Taking supplements is a technology, and it is a wise thing to do. Okay, well, that's it for this segment of SNU. I'll complete my discussion on creatine in next month's clinical review. First, I'll answer the two remaining questions we did not cover, namely, when do you take it, and are there any side effects? Plus, I'll include a recent review, a position stand from the International Society of Sports Nutrition on creatine supplementation. Thanks for listening, and here's a quote from Thomas Jefferson on wisdom and power. I hope our wisdom will grow with our power and teach us that the less we use our power, the greater it will be.